Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
It's Here and Now, and as we all know, Detroit is facing enormous challenges. Mayor Dave Bing's new budget calls for laying off 2,500 city workers. Dozens of public schools have closed. Broken streetlights won't be repaired. Some working ones will be shut off to save money. The auto industry, while bailed out, isn't what it once was. Former Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick pled guilty to felony charges in a perjury case. He's in jail, facing more corruption charges this fall. But Detroit's collapse points to bigger cracks in the foundation. A number of camera lenses have lingered on this landscape, what filmmakers call ruin porn. But now locals are stepping up to take a longer look. The film Burn focuses on Detroit firefighters. Detropia highlights the resilience of Detroit residents. And now there is DeForce, made by two first-time filmmakers who grew up in suburbs north of Detroit. It airs tonight on the Documentary Channel. Director Daniel Falconer joins us from the studios of WDET in Detroit. Daniel, welcome.
Hello, thank you.
And we also want to welcome producer Andrew Rodney. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Well, I just want to ask you first. I'm sure you're familiar with the story of what happened when NBC's Chris Hansen, who also is from outside Detroit, made that Dateline special that so angered city officials they sort of, you know, wanted to close down shop for future filmmakers. For people who didn't see the Dateline special, it was tough. And the one thing that everyone always mentions is that it showed people eating, I think it was raccoons, you know, so desperate. What did you want to show? Daniel, you take it.
Sure. Well, the movie has a very specific arc, which is the question you lay out at the beginning. You know, if conditions are as we see today, how and why do they get to be that way? And so it's much more a political history than it is a document of how bad certain parts of the city are today. You can't get around showing that, and we do because it's striking and it might compel people to action or engagement. But our interest is in how and why, not just what's the worst visual we can find and let's masquerade it around, which I think, you know, the Dateline special, not to say that it didn't have any context whatsoever, but it fell more into that category.
Well, and it sure is a history. I mean, it takes us back along several timelines that have to do with race, have to do with government policy. Did you know this history, Andrew?
Only pieces.
Yeah.
Very, very small pieces.
Well, start with what you learned. Start with, for instance, race relations. I was interested that, you know, we knew that blacks had been part of the Great Migration that came to Detroit after the Civil War. There was a race riot in the 1800s. But especially since some people might know that there was another riot in 1943, it was interesting to see how good race relations at many different times were.
You know, it was a bastion for African Americans from the, you know, early 1800s into the 60s, 70s, 80s. It has been one of the strongest areas for black businesses. The factory systems were, to a degree, open. So, yeah, there was a lot of reason to have agreement. But sometimes maybe it appeared better than it was. You know, it's interesting that right before the riots, they were pointing to Detroit as a model city at that point, model city for race relations. Well, a lot of that was just marketing.
There are other things you trace. Drug policy, for instance. And this is fascinating. I don't think I've seen this comparison anywhere else. You found Prohibition era, would they have been rum runners, you know, alcohol runners, older men now, all white, and compared their experience to black drug dealers. Let's listen to a scene in which we hear one of those rum runners, and we'll follow that with a scene in which we hear from one of the drug dealers you meet, a hustler you meet on the streets of Detroit.
Started, I was about 11. Go downtown to the Toller Hotel or the Statler Hotel, and wait for a salesman to come out, and he'd go up to him and ask him, would you like to buy some whiskey, you know, and we'd sell it to him, and we'd get $8 a pint.
I think I started rolling there like 11 or something. I wasn't really full-fledged rolling, but I'd take a couple packs of heroin or something around the corner for my cousin or something, like one or two times a day. By 13, I was full-fledged rolling, going to middle school with 150, 200 on me every day.
The reason that we put that I felt was important to put those guys in the movie is, you know, those guys meaning the rum runners or what have you, who at age 11 were involved in federal crime, you know, smuggling booze. You know, they're white and they're in a suit and so on. And if you bumped into that guy in the street, you'd say, oh, pardon me, sir. You know, you wouldn't treat him like some punk like you might a kid who you knew were dealing drugs today. But sure enough, that's his background. He used to be a federal criminal. And it's just a means to an end for most people in communities. And there's really no other employment to be had.
Well, and what are you and different specialists that you spoke to saying? Is the point that drug use should be made legal? What's the conclusion here that rum runners were treated so much differently than black drug dealers?
The film's point is not so much to advocate for complete legalization or anything, but to bring it back to the original thesis, we're trying to account for how and why the city's gotten how it has. And you hear a lot of focus on things like the loss of jobs in the auto sector, and that's really important. What we didn't hear in the dialogue was an honest assessment of just how much the way we go about dealing with this drug war cripples communities like those in Detroit. When you have people going to jail, you have people getting shot, it divides families, it ruins communities. Now, drugs do that on their own, sure, but incentivizing the dealing in drugs by making it worth such silly amounts of money as we have has really torn this city apart. And I think it's important to look at a lot of the people engaged and in it as people, as not inherently bad or just inclined to criminal behavior, but rather survivors who have very few other options. You know, it's of such long standing, the drug community and employment in the drug sector, that where, say, the community member in your neighborhood who's able to help people keep their lights on, give you some money if you're short with money, he's not a doctor or a lawyer. He's a drug dealer, a successful drug dealer.
Daniel, we've managed to go this whole interview without talking about those horrible images of Detroit that people complain, or maybe all people see or hear about when they hear about Detroit. It's really quite compelling when we see it in the film, how you can go block after block after block and there'll be nothing but decay. When you're looking at it, can you even believe it? You know, it looks...
No. It's haunting just to inhabit the space, for sure. And I don't say that to speak ill of the city. I'm just talking about the particular places I'm standing in. It's as a Michigander, as an American, I'm very bothered that we allow a place where other Americans live to get to this kind of condition. Not only allow, but as the movie tries hard to document, in some cases through policy, kind of forced it on the city. So we put that stuff in there because it is the face of the problem, no question. And if you visited the city for just a little while, you would definitely see that. You might not see someone eating raccoons, per se, but you would definitely see blight. And you'd see it pretty widespread. And in some cases, it's at a colossal scale, like some of the factories or the famous train station that we show. You know, we're not just trying to piggyback on everyone else who's decided to take pictures of that. It's just you kind of can't mention or tell a comprehensive story of Detroit without talking about the scale of those.
But by the way, you mentioned this train station. I mean, it's really quite something. You have to see that, right? Every time you come in and out of the city, this huge, empty building. What a horrible symbol.
Worse than the train station is homelessness. This condition that you, and the comportment and the way that, you know, you will find people that's what, when you're here for a while, that's what weighs on you.
Those other things are really just emblems of anything. But the sort of thing that great sets you is more looking at the quality of life of your fellow citizens.
Yeah. Go to a school and, you know, the rampant lack of security in their lives and that they can't go out and play. That's what stays with you.
That's Andrew Rodney and Daniel Falconer. Together they've made the documentary DeForce. Andrew and Danny, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you.
And again, DeForce airs tonight on the Documentary Channel. For more and to see a slideshow, go to hereandnow.org. Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI. I'm Robin Young. Please join us to see what this week brings here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
PRI, Public Radio International.